Possession crucial from this. How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point. And there's the whistle. It's over. It's over.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
But what I love in hurling, I love players that never give in.
He hits it. He hits it. Wow. It's over the bar. Oh, holy Moses.
Hello. Welcome to the RTEGA podcast. Hope you're all doing well. Delighted to say we have Eamon Fitzmaurice with us, along with Rory O'Neill and Damien Lawler, both of RTE, to look back on last weekend's Gaelic football and a chat about some of the repercussions and what's kind of come out of the weekend. And in a little while, we will have Derek McGrath on board to look ahead to this weekend's hurling. A few very interesting games to look at, and there's also been, there was only one senior hurling match really last weekend, Wexford and Kilkenny, but there's been a lot made out of it because the spotlight was on it. As my father said to me, will you ever stop talking about Wexford? It's not doing us any good. And I said, well, that's what happens when there's only one game of a weekend. There tends to be a bit of a focus on you. But anyway, he's safe for 40 minutes because we're going to talk about football, or half an hour. Well, I say we're going to talk about football, but actually we're going to start with a little bit about Camogie, Damien, because this morning we're recording at noon on Wednesday. Peace has descended on the Camogie Valley at last. They have found a spot in the 2021 calendar to play the 2020 Provincial and All-Ireland Club Championships.
Yeah, so like at about 6 o'clock this morning, I was in a correspondence with Hopper McGrath, the Sarsfields Camogie manager, and Hopper, obviously, you'd all know, lads, was a fine hurler for Galway in his day, but Hopper was, Sarsfields were one of 35 clubs that still had 2020 club championship games outstanding in the Camogie series. And when the Camogie Association decided to go league, club championship, inter-county championship, there was an outcry and an uproar from inter-county players, the WGPA, and inter-county managers. So they wanted a proper split season and blocks of it. So after about 2 weeks of tension there, the Camogie Association, maybe 1 week, Camogie Association took another look at it and said the feedback was that they needed to go back to the clubs and members to get a proper mandate to see what ultimately was the solution. So they went back to the clubs and members. This time around, they voted to have a split season whereby it would be league into championship, then a block of club games. But on the condition that the 2020 club series would be gone. So clubs and members voted for that. And then once they voted for that and that came in and the inter-county crowd were happy, the 2020 clubs that were still involved, they got very, very upset. And, you know, I suppose they're quite entitled to it, but ultimately that's what the membership voted for. So I do feel sorry for the administrators. I feel sorry for the clubs involved as well, because they were caught in the crossfire. But this was getting messy now. I mean, this was going on for the last month. We covered it extensively with RTE. You were looking at a DRA, Dispute Resolution Authority hearing on Friday night. That has now been averted after 4 hours of mediation talks last night. Chaired, Hopper tells me, by Pádraig Duffy, the former director general, who performed very, very impressively, according to Hopper. And as a result, the 2020
I'd say he's well used to mediation. used to mediation.
Yeah. And I'd say that's why he was drafted in, Rory. Yeah. And just to finish off then, I think the 2020 series will take place now in November. It'll be over by mid-December, maybe the 19th of December. That'll mean the 2021 series will be pushed back to early 2022. So it's been messy. You've had a new Camogie president into office. It hasn't been an easy introduction for her. You've had a battle between grassroots and inter-county. Many of them players will be on both sides of that camp. But it's resolved now, and there is no expense or kind of bad PR of a DRA hearing. It's done, finally.
Yeah, we hope, because it has been
for now.
It has been rumbling on for a while. Okay, we'll move from Camogie to tennis, obviously, because it's the story everybody's been talking about. It's very interesting. Naomi Osaka's withdrawal from the French Open after first stating that she would take her fines and not do any media because it was impacting on her mental health. First statement was probably a little bit unclear as to the depths of her feeling and the struggles she's had since winning the 2018 US Open, that she has actually suffered from depression and shy person, doesn't really like doing media. So I think her second statement when she withdrew from the French Open, I think made it a lot clearer. And I think a lot of people probably came down more on her side of things. Although I'll tell you, there are many people in the media who are staunch defenders of the glory of a press conference, which I don't think any of the three journalists in this call are great lovers of a press conference. But I want to know what Eamon Fitzmaurice thinks about a press conference. A lot more relaxed in the GAA normally. It tends to be a huddle outside a dressing room or, you know, on the sideline for the league, maybe even early rounds of the provincial championship. But when you get to Croke Park, there is that press conference room. You know, you do your TV, you do your radio, and then you're trundled in for the press. How did you find doing that, Eamon?
When you won, it was grand, Mikey. It was no problem. The days you last, of course, it was a bit harder. But look, I always saw it as part of the duty of being a manager, and I always did it. I never shirked the responsibility. But one thing I always did, win or lose, was I gave myself a chance before doing an interview. I would always prioritize speaking to the players first, straight after a game. And that gave me a chance to gather my thoughts then as well. Because I suppose from the media perspective, probably the goal is when you catch someone straight away and they're either high after a victory or they're raw after a defeat, and you probably get them at their most honest. But I always...
That's when we want you, all right, yeah.
Yeah, even with John Kiley recently there, yeah. You know, very measured, very steady always, and with the comments about Galway was straight after the game. And, you know, I think it's easy to be a bit raw in that kind of a situation. So I always try to give myself a bit of time and just gather my thoughts and try to be measured enough then and fair in the press conference. And of course, if there was something that you felt needed to be said, you'd say it. But for the most part, it was a kind of a political exercise, really.
Yeah, a manager in a team sport probably is never going to talk himself out of doing it. The odd one, you could say, obviously, take your fine or whatever. I will not speak, Jose Mourinho, you know, whatever it is.
Well, Fergie didn't talk to the Beeb for, was it 10 years as well? Yeah.
Yeah, and he could take his fines. He had the political power. Individual sports people is more interesting, but I would imagine, Eamon, you had players who you played alongside and who played under you who were just uncomfortable with the idea of doing media and probably swerved every press night, swerved every post-match interview. And I suppose in a team sense, it's an easier decision to make, and you won't get that spotlight on you unless you are, you know, the superstar. Unless you're David Clifford and you're refusing to do media, people might notice. But if you're, you know, if you're a, you know, a cog in the team, even a team as good as Kerry, you can slip away and not do that media if you don't want to do it.
You can, absolutely. And I think it's probably easier to manage for people now, probably to the detriment of getting to know the players, you know, the kind of Sunday feature that would have been, you know, a thing 20 years ago where a player would sit down and have a big sit down with a journalist and you get a bit of insight into them and into their story. That's not as common anymore. You might get one at the end of the season, but during the season, they're very rare. So it is easier for players, and I think only fairly so. Some players are very comfortable dealing with the media, some aren't. And, you know, particularly in an amateur sport, I never had a problem with lads that didn't want to talk to the media. In the early part of my own career, it was something I avoided. When Jack O'Connor came in, he asked me, would it be something I would do as one of the players that would kind of speak to the media? And I did it, and I had no problem doing it. But I think as you go through different phases in your career, when you're younger, maybe it is wise to probably not set yourself up for a fall. As you become a bit more mature and established, you understand the pitfalls around it. But in general, I think, you know, looking at it from the media perspective, it is a very sterile environment now. And it's, you know, it's hard to get the kind of colour stories and the interesting stories during the season. And I understand that that's not great. But at the same time, when, you know, the leading teams, when you look at the Dubs and the way they manage their message, you know, you're not going to be putting yourself out there then when you're on their coattails. So I'm not sure what the answer to it is, but yeah. It's certainly managed very well now by all counties, really.
Yeah, it's Rory, I know you as the producer of the Sunday game have your running battle sometimes trying to get a man of the match out or whatever. But a press conference is kind of a different animal, and, you know, I have kind of mixed feelings on it myself. I think I don't think journalists can be too high and mighty about, you know, oh, you have to do a press conference, when there's many a press conference that many a journalist says, I'm not bothered going to that. That guy's no good. He doesn't give good quotes. I won't bother with that. I don't need quotes from this one. So the media does need to be fed, particularly rights holders and stuff, which is kind of the perspective you'd have. But I think it's a dangerous game to suggest, personally, I think it's a dangerous game to make a press conference an obligatory matter for, be it an individual sports person like a golfer or a tennis player or a sports or a member of a sports team.
I couldn't understand why they couldn't come up with some sort of happy medium, given the status and the stature of someone of her standing in the game, that they couldn't like agree to, okay, you mightn't have to do, you know, you mightn't have to sit like, from what I can gather, they have to go in there and they have to put themselves in front of the press corps for, I don't know, half an hour, 40 minutes, shorten it down, say it's a limit of 4 or 5 questions, no repeat questions. We're going to talk to X, Y, Z, and D. And then just move it on. Like I would have an element of not necessarily suspicion. I find sometimes that the mantle of mental health can be tossed around quite flagrantly. As somebody who has a very, very acute understanding from my own situation, my own family situation of the pitfalls of mental health and what mental health, you know, the impact that can really have on an individual. You know, I think I've seen it a few times now where professional athletes simply just don't want to do something, and they might throw this out there, not just professional athletes. It's, you know, anybody that's in the spotlight, and it's not a case of that we're all sitting down looking for her to brandish and furnish her psychiatric reports, but at the same time, I'm sure this is something that she has been accustomed to dealing with for the best part of, I don't know what age she is, she's probably in her early 20s, so she's been on it because they go into the circuit very young, particularly women, like, so she's been on the circuit probably since she's 13 or 14, so she's well used to it. I'd say personally it looks to me like she's just fed up of it, answering the same stupid questions over and over again, and you know, just wants to concentrate on her tennis, and more power to her. I just don't, I think in a roundabout way, I think she's been badly advised by the people closest to her. And I think they could have, as I said, they could have come to some sort of understanding and some compromise situation where everybody would have saved face and the media gets its tuppence worth and a few quotes, which are always meaningless anyway. A lot of these, I mean, Mikey, you've been at these press conferences. Damien, you've been at them, and I'm sure Eamon, you might've had to sit through one or two or yourself. They're fairly mundane, you know, rudimentary. They're like, I mean, does anything ever outlandish or crazy happen in them anyway? I mean, I don't know.
No, I can actually, in a previous life, I did cover Wimbledon one year when I worked in London, and it was very interesting. It's probably the best sporting event I've ever been at, actually, in terms of just how well organized it is. The tennis is stupendous and everything, but the press conferences are probably 5, 10, 15 minutes. And for Wimbledon, they're packed. And I was bullied by the Williams sisters one day when they were after winning a doubles match, and they were playing each other in the final or a semi-final about 2 days later. And I asked them, I said something like, well, so what will you do now for the next couple of days? Will you avoid each other? Will you still practice together? Because, you know, you're playing each other in such a huge match.
Good question.
Perfectly legitimate question.
Yeah, yeah.
One of them, I think it was Serena, just looked at me and she says, next question, please. I'm not answering such an unimaginative question. And it was an awkward silence. And they didn't answer it. And as we were leaving,
slapped down by Serena.
Big time. And as we were leaving, I got a load of pats on the back from Jordan, says, Jesus, that was rough. You didn't deserve that. That was bad. So these press conferences, like, if certain players can handle them, certain can't. But Damien, what Rory says is a fair point, isn't it? You can count on, probably in your long, distinguished journalistic career, you could probably count on 2 hands post-match press conferences you went to that were really worthwhile.
Yeah, like, I think from a reporter's point of view, Mikey, and that's right, Rory. Like, I mean, the press conference itself would never have excited me too much. If you have, I remember very, very early days, I was covering soccer and, you know, you'd be sent out to a kind of the Dublin city or the airport, and you might get into a huddle with Roy Keane and you'd just be hanging on every word he said. But by and large, they're fairly forgettable. But I think that, you know, I would have interviewed Eamon when he was Kerry manager before and after games for a number of years. And like, I think what it comes across from a reporter's point of view on those occasions, like, for me, you're just looking to get an insight into where the game was won and lost. You know, I've been lucky enough that, you know, had some really, really good players and managers would chat to you and open up to you. Like, I mean, Colin O'Riordan after the Munster final
brilliant,
last year.
Brilliant
Shane Dowling before that with Sky when I was working there after Limerick won the All-Ireland. And, you know, just, you see, that connection came from knowing Shane's story and knowing the injury worries he had and checking in on him over the years just to see how he was doing. And, like, you just develop a kind of a connection with these lads and a trust. And once that trust is there, then I think that's hugely important because you don't go looking for controversy. You go looking for an insight. There's a big, big difference. I think lads trust you. They'll open up to you a bit more. It's very, very simple. And I think, Eamon, you might come, maybe give me your opinion on this, but there's several ways to ask a hard question too. You know what I mean? At the end of the day, like, the likes of Eamon have devoted their whole lives, apart from their families and their jobs, to getting a team ready for a championship, to getting all the cogs and structures right. They've done everything they possibly can. They've put 40 hours a week, probably, over the period of the year, right up to when you interview them. And you have to respect that. And you have to respect that it mightn't have gone right for them on the day. And where did they think it didn't go right? Because once or twice, I've put in my own words into a question. Like, I asked the manager one day, who had, you know, his team had blown a lead, and they lost the game by a point. And I asked him, was he frustrated? No, I think he clearly was, but he didn't like the word frustrated, and he pointed that out a few times. So I've learned from that, like, over the years, to keep my questions open-ended. Because at the end of the day, they're the experts, not me. But what do they think? But I just feel maybe, Eamon, you might have different... Maybe it's all the one who asked you the question, but I feel if you put a bit of empathy in there and show that you understand the game, you might get more out the other end as well.
Oh, yeah, 100%, Damien. And look, I think everyone respects the fact that, you know, a journalist or reporter is there to do a job. I think, you know, sometimes you, especially after losing a game, you're going to be very disappointed. You're not really going to be wanting to go into it. And I think you're always very conscious as well that the following day's newspapers, you don't want, number one, to come across as a sore loser. Yeah. You don't want to be throwing your own players under the bus. You know, you're trying to walk a fine line. Oftentimes you do have a good idea why things went wrong straight away. But you're not going to be, you know, like I said, you're not going to be overly critical of your own players. During the league, you might be trying something different and maybe vastly different. And again, you don't want to give that insight to your opponents that you are trying, whereas it's very natural to say, look, lads, hold on a second here. I'm trying a new defensive system, and that's why we're leaking goals at the moment, or whatever it is, because suddenly everyone is saying, oh, geez, what are they onto? What are they doing? And so on. So there's times you have to take the hit, and you just have to be gracious about it, and that's it. But I think, look, I have to say, hand in my heart, my dealings with the media for the whole time that I was involved as a manager, I think it's different as a manager and a player, but as a manager, I was dealt with very respectfully by the media, and I would have reciprocated that. I would have been open, and when I was available, I was available. When I wasn't available, I was very upfront about it, and, you know, I just said, no, we'll have a collective press conference in Tralee or Killarney on this date. I'll be available all that evening, all that day, but not until then, because I have to be focusing on the meantime. So I would have found the relationship very healthy, and, you know, I wouldn't have had, of course, there was times you disagree with what people had to say or write or whatever, but that's the nature of the business.
In 6 years, Mike, you mentioned there about Dublin, and Dublin are a peculiar case, and I would have a certain amount of sympathy as well for Dublin, right? There is a proviso there in that they're obviously the most glamorous team in Gaelic games. They're living in a kind of a very big fishbowl up here, where their profile is through the roof, and the demands put on the players is extraordinary in terms of they're being pulled from pillar to post, whether it's medals and interviews and media and radio interviews and turning up to training sessions and presenting this and presenting that, and obviously the commercial opportunities that they have as well. But in the 6 years that Jim Gavin was manager of Dublin, I think he gave one interview, one post-match press conference where he said anything interesting at all, and that was in the wake of the Dear McConnelly suspension for 3 months, the time he pushed or manhandled or whatever with Kieran Branigan. And it was extraordinary because it was one of those days that was meant to be a fairly average, run-of-the-mill, quiet day from the Sunday games point of view. I even remember writing the email saying it to Desi Dolan and Joe Brawley, who were on the panel that night. Very straightforward. Dublin are playing Westmeath, lads. It'll be a 20-point beating. You know, nothing to worry about. Next thing, Jim Gavin walks into a press conference, refuses to cooperate with RT, gets into a standoff with Robbie Irwin, slaughters Pat Spillane, slaughters Colm O'Rourke, calls into question their professions. The whole thing went off. It was just, you know, it was funny. Yeah.
Yeah. See, that's the thing. A press conference can be good. And I would say it'd be very dangerous that there's some, you know, you see some sweeping statements. So they should be gone. There's no need for them in this day and age. There is a need for press conferences. They can be useful. The thing we don't understand in GA is that they're not obligatory. And they're not individual sports people, which is where I think he would have some.
There is a level of there is a level of paranoia though, guys, gone into it. I mean,
with
like
some of them, yeah.
Yeah, with some, like, I mean, there's media managers in there for the last few years, not just PROs now. Like, I mean, the specialists brought in to deal with it. And you just have to say it, sometimes it's completely over the top. You know, as Eamon just pointed out, like in 90% of cases, there's mutual respect there. Just get on with the job,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Guardiola one as well was the time with Mourinho when they were Barcelona against Real Madrid in the Champions League semi-final. That was another good one as well.
Yeah.
Had a bit of an explosion about. He's the Jeff and the Jose is the Jeff in the press conference room. So that was another good one.
Yeah, I know there are some gems in there. Anyway, I guess now after covered the camogie, we've covered the Gaelic football. Gaelic football is next on the list. Then, Eamon, your former teammate and player Colm Cooper was pretty strong on the fact that there was no league finals in Division 2 and Division 4, and quite likely not in Division 1 or 3 either. Without, you know, results going a certain way, Tyrone beating Kerry and the other one, Dublin having to beat Donegal, and then Derry and Fermanagh have to win the semis in Division 3.
Correct.
Would it bother you particularly knowing now three game, like it's been a 3-game league. You'll definitely have a fourth game. The fourth game is the one that matters in Divisions 2, 3 and 4. And not so much for the top half of Division 1. You're potentially playing a semi-final, which won't have the reward of a final. But is this been an unusual year? Has this league been a tune-up for Championship, particularly the top end of Division 1? And is it more important to avoid more soft tissue injuries than it is to have league finals?
It probably is, but I do think it's disappointing, all right, Mikey, that, look, we knew this from the start. It was flagged from the start. You know, I can understand with the likes of Donegal involved in the preliminary in Ulster, why there might be a bit of pressure there. But, you know, Kerry and Clare playing in Munster on the 26th of June, is there need for that to be played that early? Similar with the Connacht Championship, is there need for it to be starting that early? I don't know. And look, I know with fixtures, it is a minefield and we have to take into account that, you know, it's hard to balance everything. But I do feel that the football is getting a hard deal from the point of view. The hurling went back a week early. They're getting their league played off.
And the back door.
Could the football have got back the week early to play it off? And the fact that there's no back door. It's you know, it's a bit disappointing. I do think it's disappointing that the finals aren't going to take place. But having said that, we've known that that's the way it's going to be since the start. It was well flagged. I imagine they looked at all permutations, you know, the top two teams go straight to final, the bottom two have a playoff for relegation. It leaves the middle two. What do they do? Do they play a challenge game against each other? Do they play another regulation league game there that means nothing? So I'm sure they looked at everything, but definitely it's a bit unusual. I would have loved to have seen them gone back the week early, get the league final played. Of course, then you're taking into account the soft tissue injury situation that is becoming a bit of an epidemic, and then you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. Then, so disappointing, but understandable maybe in one sense.
Yeah, it does seem to be, Eamon, particularly say for teams that are less likely to progress in their provincial championships. It's almost a last year to an extent after one perhaps last year. I'll just use my own county as an example because it's an easy one. Wexford, they had two league games this year. They're playing Wicklow in the first round of the Leinster Championship. That may or may not, obviously, they have a shot. They're not playing Dublin, so they have a shot. But They're playing Dublin if they do win that one. So, you know, you're looking at a very short season, and they're playing a Shield final against Sligo.
Shield.
Yeah, it's not even... Leitrim gave them a walkover in the Shield semi-finals, and now they're playing Sligo in the final. For if you're a Wexford football, we had Shane Roach on a few weeks ago. He was putting on a brave face, but it must be hard to motivate lads when they know that there's a good chance their season is going to be five games.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, it's all about the games and it's all about playing the games. And I think you'd prefer to be managing soft tissue injury issues and trying to balance the load and all that kind of thing rather than managing a group's kind of disappointment because they're playing so little. So, yeah, it's not ideal. It's grand for the big teams that are going to advance through the championship, and it could become a fantastic romantic summer for them, similar to what happened with Cavan and Tipperary last year. But there are going to be a large majority of the counties that will be out early, and it'll be back to the clubs and they'll get going there. But certainly from the point of view of the inter-county stuff, it'll be a short season for them.
Damien, you are more familiar with the administration of the GAA than probably anybody here, which is saying something, not including myself in that. I know bugger all.
That just means I'm old, Mikey. That's
yeah.
all.
Yeah, but you were across all this in that long, anguished winter and early spring. Was it considered to push the club championships forward by or back by a couple of more weeks to give a little bit more space for the championship and then allow for a guaranteed league programme? I presume they looked at that.
Yeah, well, Fitzy's after putting the finger on it there with you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't, because like I think the message screaming through from grassroots was that like 93% of the GAA's membership are club players, and there was just a huge need for club action, and there wasn't a lot of information coming from public health or the government for a period of time there. The season started back so late this year, like the GAA were hoping that initially that it might have kicked off maybe February, you know, to be fair about it. And that didn't happen. It was pushed way, way back. And I think they wanted to give teams in football, and there is no back door, but at least five games. And the hurling fraternity took the GAA's hand off when the extra couple of league games was offered to them. They even came back to training a week early when the GPA had been arguing that 4 weeks pre-season training was optimum. But I think they accepted three and they came back. But see, unfortunately, there's always a race for something in the GAA. Like the moment the games were cleared to resume, the race for challenge matches started and the push for challenge matches started. Then we had to wait a little while for that. And when that was clear, then teams went at it hammer and tongs, and you were seeing injuries, soft tissue injuries everywhere. And I just feel like that even you saw with the Camogie row, like nobody's ever happy about it. And I think we knew from the start that there wouldn't be any league finals there because they wanted to give counties a minimum of five games and have a free weekend going into the championship. Now, could you have peeled off a bit towards the latter end of the year and maybe shortened the club championship a bit more? You possibly could, but they also have 2020 club championships to complete. They have 11 counties who haven't completed 2020 yet, and they have to be fair to them. So, like, I mean, counties like Offaly, if they reach the Christy Ring hurling final, for example, when do they play the 2020 championship? Never mind the 2021. So all the problems are mounting, and I suppose every stakeholder will take their own little slice out of it. But to be fair to Croke Park, like, I mean, they have an overall decision to make with all of this. And I think they've done their living best. I think they performed miracles last year, in my own opinion, running off the championship. This year has been tougher for them. But as you see, we're talking about maybe formats and games and league finals. And look, the optics are not good of not having league finals. But again, we knew this from the outset. And I think counties would nearly rather the free weekend, you know, break. Some might not know that could be argued otherwise, but that just sets the context, Mikey, of what's happened over the last few months.
Yeah. Okay. Eamon, something you wanted to touch on, because we haven't any football to preview this weekend, but one team who obviously have caught everybody's eye, mostly opposition managers like Ryan McMenamin, who described of Derry after they beat them. Derry are a very, very fit team. Very, very fit. A very, very fit team.
Very fit.
Very fit. But I think, Eamon, beyond their fitness, Rory Gallagher has struck on something here. He's got buy-in from the Schlotneil players and from everybody else. He has Conor Glassback from the AFL. He has Chrissy McCaig. He has what people are talking about. There's no sticky cornerbacks or, you know, man markers left in football, but there's Chrissy McCaig anyway. Now, up front, he has Shane McGuigan, who We had Oisin on here last week, like just extolling the magnificence of Shane McGuigan. But, you know, a lot of that was there previously and it hadn't quite coalesced. Rory Gallagher's come in with a reputation for playing dour defensive football and he's turned Derry into the Harlem Globetrotters.
Yeah, no, I've always been kind of, the last couple of years in particular, I've been scratching my head about Derry because they've always had good footballers. They've always had a good style. We played them in an All-Ireland semi-final in 2004. They beat Kerry in the league final in 2008. We see what Schlachnail have done hurling and football-wise. St. Pat's Mahara, their school, their kind of nursery up there, we played them in the Hogan Cup final. We played them in the All-McGeer Cup final. They were in the All-Ireland Minor final in 2017. Kerry, David Clifford led, gave them a good beating on the day, but they still got to the All-Ireland Minor final. So they've always had players, and I've been kind of wondering, you know, what is going on? Why is there division amongst the clubs? Is there, what was it that was holding them back? But they definitely seem to be, in this league, they're exciting. You mentioned the share of the players there, Mikey. I like the look of their goalkeeper, Oran Lynch. I mean, the last day he was playing out in front of the full back line at times, intercepting kickouts from the other side. The spine of the team, Brendan Rodgers, okay, looks like he's a hamstring injury, but him at full back, excellent player. McKenless is a kind of an attacking centre back. Connor Glass, Emmett Bradley, middle of the field. Shane McGuigan, you mentioned him, outstanding up front. Seems to have got stronger from his the times I would have seen him playing with Schlachnail. Lachlan at centre forward is an excellent player. McFall, a good wing forward, working hard. Benny Hearn inside. They've got an awful lot of good players, and Rory Gallagher has had an epiphany during the pandemic where he's decided to defend well and also attack. As you know, they're still structured very well defensively. I think what I've seen from them in the games is their intensity defensively is higher than a lot of teams at the moment. Up front, they've been very good. I definitely think if I had access to the whole of the high behind from that game the last day, I definitely think there's a couple of very interesting pieces that are worth looking at video analysis wise. I think they're going to get promoted, but in the Ulster Championship, I'll be interested. They are at the hard side of the draw. They're playing Donegal, probably, who'll probably beat Down. They're also at the same side as Tyrone, but they're interesting. And I think there's a couple of things about them. Their long kick-out option, I'm not sure about. Their substitutes in terms of the depth of their bench, I'm not sure about yet. But they're looking interesting, and I'll be curious about how they get on the Ulster Championship.
Is there a risk that, well, not a risk, is it a possibility, as what Ricey says, they're very, very fit. Is there a chance that maybe they have been focusing more on fitness than others and that they'll kind of come back to the pack a little bit when the likes of Donegal, Tyrone, the teams they might face, get a couple more weeks of training in, that maybe we're seeing it in Ireland at least, that the teams aren't at full pitch in terms of fitness, in terms of intensity, but maybe a little bit of it is that compared to Fermanagh, Cavan and Longford, Derry are just, they're just like championship ready for the league.
So possibly, they're probably ahead of those teams, maybe standard-wise as well, but I think because the window is so short this year, that's not as much of a consideration. You know, in a traditional league, a team that's flying in February, you can nearly rest assured that come the middle of the summer, they're going to come a cropper. But, you know, most teams go up through the gears. But in fairness to Derry, they are very, very fit. And I think they'll be able to maintain that, no problem. I think avoiding injuries will be the thing for them. Brendan Rodgers, if he's out, you for a while, it'll be a big loss. But no more than if Michael Murphy's out for Donegal for the preliminary game and even into the second game against Derry, he'll be a huge loss for them. And I just think, look, as usual, the Ulster Championship is going to be very interesting again this year.
And speaking about that, actually, when we were chatting this morning about them coming up as a subject matter, I had a quick look. Since they made the Ulster final in 2011, which, as we know, is a lifetime ago in Gaelic football terms, they've had one win in the Ulster Championship since then. So one win in 10 years in the Ulster Championship. That came against Down in 2015. They've had two championship wins in the last 5 years. players, and that was against Waterford and Wexford, which without being too disrespectful, Mikey, you know, it isn't exactly something you'd be writing letters home at Christmas about.
It's okay, Roy.
You know, they've been flirting down in Division 4 at times, though. And to go back to Eamon's point earlier, given they have traditionally, given the sort of pick they have between Ballinderry, their prominence in the Ulster Club Championship, Slochneil, the success that they've had at underage and at colleges level in Hogan Cup, they're a peculiar side insofar as nobody has really been able to galvanise them in sort of the one direction. And I think, to kind of back up what Eamon was saying, they will be a very, very interesting dark horse in this year's Ulster Championship, and I think it's a real banana skin for Donegal if Donegal are missing Murphy, which is a very real possibility now.
Yeah, okay. That was a short football chat after a long tennis chat, which I think that's good enough for me. So Eamon, yeah, will say thank you very much, and we'll catch you again. We'll let you back to class.
See you, lads.
He hits it. It's over the bar.
Okay, we're back, and we've been joined by Derek McGrath. How are you getting on, Derek?
How are you getting on, Mikey? Not a butter. All good here.
Good stuff. We'll look ahead to the weekend's action now shortly, but I think there's a couple of things to reflect on out of Wexford and Kilkenny, Derek. The first thing being, I'm talking about Wexford a lot today. Sorry, I'm taking over. It's my show, and I'll do what I want. Wexford and Davy, you know, 2019, glorious days. You know, should have beaten Tipperary down to 14 men, etc. Since then, it hasn't happened, obviously, and there maybe we were getting hopeful after especially the comeback win over Clare, which is impressive because Lee Chin had a stinker on the freeze, so to manage that was impressive, coming back against 14 men. But the Kilkenny game, admittedly, preparation wasn't perfect, but there'd be worrying signs for Wexford hurling fans, I can tell you, as a Wexford hurling fan. What would you think?
Yeah, I'm not so sure. I think if you come off I saw Brendan Cummins had a very good article about maybe perhaps the 19 semi-final is kind of lingering, if you like. But I think if you look even at their league performances last year, they were actually going really well in the league last year, pre-COVID. You know, they actually had a really good comeback victory against Kilkenny in Wexford Park. Clare beat them, all right, but they were going well last year. So Davy kind of openly came out and kind of felt that they got the preparation wrong last year, that the top scenario kind of maybe crept in and that they were maybe overly tired or, you know, kind of did their normal game, which involves a huge amount of output of energy and running, etc., just wasn't there and they weren't firing. So you kind of expected a reaction this year in terms of the trajectory that they were on motivationally, I suppose, and that hasn't happened, I suppose. I think the two things you've mentioned already, the mitigating circumstances around not training really for 12 days, only once in the run-up to the Kenny game. The possibility of playing Kilkenny again, if they would all due respect to Leach, and having that kind of carrot and stick where siege mentality, which Davey kind of not he favours, but he certainly he draws on that kind of, you know, that approach at times, and the power of that later on, if you like, as against the draining of confidence that might be in the air in Wexford. So I'm not sure. He clung to the positives afterwards in terms of the second half, saying they won the second half, but their first half was littered with just lethargic kind of mistakes, and they just look completely devoid of any energy. So very hard to answer the question really that you've asked, but I don't think it's a hangover from 19. I think what happened, even if you look at Clare, how close Clare were in 18, Clare drew with Galway, I think, in a classic semi-final again in Croke Park. They had a replay in third this weekend, and what dominated 19 then was Clare are very close. You're very close. Even ourselves in 17, you know, we're a puck of the ball away from winning All Ireland. We listened to a winter down here of, geez, you're a young team, you're very close. Mm. So, you know, that can have its effect, but I don't think it's the case in Wexford. I think Wexford will be ready to kick on again this summer. That'd be my expectation, but that's, you know, I'm not basing it on a form line, so I don't know what I'm basing it on.
I couldn't let it pass. But what was that winter of 17-18 like for you as a manager? You were that close, as you say. You had a young team who were, you know, being lauded, you know, kind of winning individual awards, kind of being told that, you know, you're close, you know, you can win it next year. you know, nobody consciously loses motivation or begins to believe the hype, but, you know, these things can happen. Did you notice it at the time, or did you notice it afterwards, or do you think it was a negligible effect?
You got destroyed by injuries, though, Derek, didn't you?
Yeah, I know we did. Look, I think to that as well, but I knew, you know, I just knew. And you know, if you're playing a cute game, which you often do with managers, do sometimes, you know, you get out when you know it's coming. But I just felt the kind of, you know, I suppose, Jesus, I'm not building myself up, but a kind of sense of honour to the lads to kind of stay at it, you know. And, I just felt it. Like, we spent the winter, for instance, fundraising for the team holiday, and there was just distraction in the air, if you like, you know, whereas the machine nations of a Kilkenny or Dublin that are used to that process, you know, they're used to the whole, you know, we're going on the team holiday. I remember being in Cancun on New Year's Eve, and we were having the time of our lives then. And I just remember saying to myself, we're in bother here at the same time. So honestly, having a few points, enjoying it, saying this is a memory that lasts forever, but kind of saying we're in trouble here, you know, you know, just kind of a vibe. Like, you know, nothing. So I remember reading McGuinness's book where he actually talks about the year after day when they learned. He said they were kind of relying on hope for the first time in their life, you know, kind of hope, just basing things on hope. And that's where we were. And then we were in a similar situation actually to Davey, in that we were relegated from the league, not that there's any relegation for Wexford this year. We had all our eggs into one basket for the championship down in Ennis. And we kind of had said that earlier in the league. And then, obviously, we picked up a huge amount of injuries. But we kind of saw it out, if you like, without obviously the goal-to-goal controversy, that kind of stuff. But look, it's a kind of a feeling that you can't really do anything about, if that makes sense, because you're trying to balance the keeping the air of positivity. And, you know, we can get it back as against it. That's why the Waterford story of last year and this year is, I think their trajectory is, you know, is
very different. Yeah, I would agree. Yeah.
Some of the fellas like Patrick Corn and them, they've been there 8 years on the panel. So they had the natural dip, and I think we're actually ignoring them as kind of pundits, if you like, in terms of how good they actually are. But that's another. Probably come on to that later.
Yeah, no, I'm writing them down on the list now. We're not going all over. No, they were there anyway. Damien, how much of this, like, Wexford kind of Wexford's performance, or say Limerick, how they've gone so far? How much of this could be put down to a 3-week preseason, and the fact that it's obvious to the naked eye of even idiots like me that teams aren't playing at the intensity that you've come to expect from intercounty hurling, not just championship hurling, but Allianz League hurling as well, in a normal year, is played at a pitch and an intensity and a speed that I don't think we've seen yet this year.
Yeah, so I suppose to answer that, Mikey, I'll bring it back maybe just back to that Wexford Tipperary game the other in the semi-final. And just to pick up on what Derek was talking about then. I felt that I seldom saw Wexford play as well as they did that day. They were absolutely swarming Tipperary. They were finding space. They were cutting through, and Derek would know the intricate passing channels that they had, and they were finding room down the wings, but they were finding room in the centre. I think John McGrath got put off. I was wondering, like, where do Tip go from here? And then Wexford retreated a little bit. Now, Davey might argue with that or whatever, but they fell back a little bit, and they fell back into the pocket, and they allowed Tipperary to pick them off. And once Tipperary got that momentum, it was unbelievable. And that feeds into what Derek was saying then. And poor old Derek, I feel sorry for him that he was over in Cancun on New Year's Eve and couldn't enjoy it, because that's the scourge of intercounty management that never leaves your side, I would imagine, and it haunts you no matter how well you're doing. It reminds me of, again, go back to my own county, and forgive the bias, but it reminds me of the Tipperary football disaster when they won the Munster final, and everybody was, you know, speculating, would they push on now? Will they drive it on? And, you know, you're looking to and all the rest of it, but then you face into the new season, and literally half the team is gone, and you have 7 players out through travel, Collins back in Sydney Swans, but the rest of the lads are out injured. And, you know, they played Kildare in the challenge game, picked up more injuries, and haven't had half the team available to them since then. So that reflects what Derek's talking about. So you look at the Wexford squad since then, a couple of players, you know, have been struggling with injury. There's no point saying otherwise. You know, they have been there a number of years at this stage. But would I be panicking after the Kilkenny game, which I felt they were lifeless in, to be honest with you? I wouldn't. I would look to the Clare game, their comeback in that Clare game. And I would use that more as a gauge than the Wexford Kilkenny challenge last weekend. And I think that game was played in the backdrop of uncertainty. A lot of the COVID thing was used as the backdrop. But the main point is the two teams are going to face each other again in a few weeks, and I'm not so sure if Davey needed to come out with all guns blazing. Brian Cody will always come out trying to win every game, so that goes without question. But no, if I'm looking for a gauge of where Wexford are at this year, and they're not great at the moment, but the little bit of fight they showed in Clare is an indicator to me that there is still a bit of a light in that camp yet, you know.
I hope so. I'll quit the navel gazing now. Rory, on the other side of that match was just a phenomenal performance from TJ Reid. Well, it is a phenomenal, it's just kind of a TJ Reid performance. Yeah. He scored 118.
Yeah.
So the positive is TJ Reid scored 118, and isn't he a gift to us all? But the other side of that is there's 1-9 scored by the rest of the Kilkenny players, and like Brian Cody has a gift in TJ Reid, but is TJ Reid masking some kind of unusual kind of shortcomings perhaps in the Kilkenny attack?
He probably is, and he probably is this year, and he probably did last year, and maybe even the year before. And people will say that that can't continue because TJ is obviously pushing on a little bit. The flip side to that, though, is he keeps himself in incredible shape. There's no off season with TJ. He is an absolute specimen. I mean, he's 34, I think, Damien, if I'm not mistaken. Is in terms of his physique, I'd say there's easily another 2 to 3 years in TJ if he has the hunger to continue. And by then, given the tradition and the history and the conveyor belt and what Kilkenny will have coming through, I'm sure they'll find hurlers that will come in and supplement it. Will they find someone of similar quality? Probably not, no. But again, like, how often does a hurler like TJ come along? I mean, you're talking once in a generation. I heard Dawn Logue once describe him as having the sort of the physique and the strength and the sort of bull mentality of Christy Ring mixed with the graft and the guile of a Frank Cummins. And that just scared the bejesus out of me.
You say once in a generation, Roy, but Derek, if there isn't another TJ Reid come through, if it isn't Adrian Mullen or whatever, you are actually breaking a line of like obscene hurlers that goes back to the early 90s, from DJ to Henry to TJ, which... Now, they weren't one-man team by any means. Only an idiot would think that. But they were, you know, there was teams built on them, you could say. And, like, Kilkenny fans have got used for the last almost 30 years to having, like, the best forward in the country on their team.
Yeah, and look, again, bringing the Waterford side into it, I just remember the 08 final. He was only coming on as a sub. He came on with 25 minutes to go and got 5 points to play the 08 final. You know, as a water forward, you're watching that, like you're kind of saying to yourself, where is this? He go back to the apprenticeship that Richie Hogan himself, he still had to serve in a certain apprenticeship before he kind of, you know, came into the squad, if you like, and came into the team and being as obviously as central as he is to it now. Yeah, I'd have a fairly good kind of on the ground feeling for between the schools here and Kearns and Kenny CBS. And, you know, without saying that it's going to dry up, the TJ Reid is not standing out there as he might have done.
You'd have probably heard about him anyway if there was Derek.
In Waterford, for instance, we were really good miners.
You're so close.
Patrick Fitzgerald's a really good miner. There's young O'Neill, Carl O'Neill has gone into the Limerick panel.
In terms
of guys they're speculating, there's no real name there that people are speculating about. And actually, therein maybe perhaps lies the danger of other teams in terms of their underestimating of Kilkenny in terms of the collective, what they can produce all of a shot, if you like. And I think that's worth bearing in mind. But yeah, look, he's a phenomenal player. And the thing about him is he has to deal every time he goes out. Like when we used to detail Philip Manny for him, he gets Matthew O'Hanlon for 75 minutes up in his face, plus somebody else in his face.
Owen O'Donnell with Dublin.
He had Joseph Cooney following around for Glass and Dahi Burke. It's not exactly, you know, a scenario where you go out, you go in, you're in one corner and you go into the perceived, there's another thing at play here where he has to bloody deal with a fella up in his face all the way through.
Best man marker on the opposition team.
But Rory, you're right. He's risen to the occasion every single time. Like, I mean, he's 34 later this year, November, I think. And it's Derek, you were saying about coming on as a sub in 08. It's not all that long ago where Shefflin had to have a chat with him to kind
he
of...
He was going to pack it in, I think.
Yeah, he was frustrated. Yeah. And I'll always remember, like, they were playing Yee one day, Derek, and looking at the bench that Kilkenny had. It was like the Harlem Globetrotters on the bench. And he'd have had to contend with that, being sidelined and not getting enough game time for quite a while. I'm not so sure. I hate putting figures on it because I'm useless, but I think around 2012, he was really, really disillusioned with it. It might have been a bit after that even, but Henry put the arm around him and chatted to him. And just, I know from even interviewing him after games, his physique has just, you know, like in terms of, he's obviously into that industry anyway, but I think in terms of his nutrition, his lifestyle, even his rest, the way he approaches the game, he has climbed up two or three different levels. Like he's always TJ Reid gifted hurler, but he wasn't always TJ Reid superstar. That's definitely come in over the last few years. And but you're right.
Even he's very calm as well, Damien. I find he's very calm.
He's made for it, Derek. Like because interviewing him afterwards, he'll actually give you an honest answer. But he's not getting carried away. Like I mean, I'd say I've given him more crystal over the years than the MD of Waterford Crystal has produced in his tenure. And you know, he's very very respectful and very very grateful. And he treats all the camera crew with respect. He chats to everybody.
He's a gent.
But that's it straight away. It's gone. Next game. And because he knows there's a Dahi Burke or there's an Owen O'Donnell or there's somebody coming for him very, very soon again.
Yeah. As a manager, Derek, is there a temptation to become reliant? Like to say, okay, almost like the Mighty Ducks, just you could have a strategy, you could have a game plan, or you could just say, give it to TJ. Is it a sensible thing to do when you have one of the best hurlers of the modern era who can score 180 in the game? Like, just give him the ball, or is that potentially kind of scuppering your team to do such a thing?
Well, I think if you track that back to the principles of Brian's teams over the years, even when there was a rare day where Henry might have an off day, Brian would be straight on camera talking about how many hooks, how many blocks, how many. You know, how many turnovers he got, like, you know, and I think it's the same thing with TJ in terms of if he's held, I think Brian will still espouse how hard he worked for the team. Except the one thing I would say with TJ is that they've used him very cleverly at full forward, and even in the semi-final a couple of years ago, he went in corner forward on Sean Finn for a few minutes. He went, you know, a few years ago, the great semi-final against Limerick, he went on Declan Hannan. Then he was wing forward on Dan Morrissey. You know, he's used really well, like, you know, and look, I'm not sure if the conversation in Kilkenny, like, it's up to you, Walter, it's up to you, Richie, it's up to you, Billy Ryan, to step up in the absence of TJ, or in the case of TJ being held, if you like, on a given day. But look, he's nailed on for 10, 11 points from frees at any given day.
And yeah,
it's attractive. It's like Canning, I suppose we call it. You put all your focus on him over the years, and next minute he's withdrawn, he's going 100 yards from the goal, he's bringing someone with him, and it's game over then because the space has been created by him himself and he has that ability too.
Yeah. But that team ethic though, Mikey, will stand true no matter who's playing that Kilkenny team. Because I remember around the time they were dominant winning All-Ireland after All-Ireland, especially when they're going for five in a row. They were outworking the opposition like 60, I think roughly average, about 63 to 67 hooks, blocks and tackles per game to the opponent's 44, 46. And that was with the greatest hurlers of all time on the field. So, like, Cody's not going to let that work ethic ever decline. And that's what keeps them in games. And that's what maybe left them beat Limerick a couple of seasons ago unexpectedly, you know?
Yeah. And when I remember one of his greatest performances, actually, without scoring, was Ballyhale played Ballygunner in the All Ireland Cup semi 2 years ago.
Yes.
Philip Manny, normally for Ballygunner, would do what I would say every centre back would do. He'd kind of follow his man, he'd stay back around, kind of to D, if you like. But Philip went toe to toe with DJ. Whole match. TJ didn't score from play, right? But TJ dragged Philip all over the field, 110, 120 yards from the all the way down to his other side of the field. Philip was just detailed to mark him. And Owen Cody, Adrian Mullen in the one forward line were able to reap the benefits of him.
Yeah. We should mention Billy Ryan did score 1-4 the other day against Wexford. So it's not like there's nobody up there or anything like that. It's just the
rest of the Kilkenny forwards though, Mikey, wouldn't have too many defenses quaking in their boots. That's the big difference. And that's the one thing that TJ brings to the table that Kilkenny will sorely miss when he does go home.
Well, no, you're right, Rory. But they'll survive because it likes the John Donnelly who puts in three and a half shifts. And by the way, we spoke about TJ Reid. That game we mentioned earlier in the football part of the show, Rory, about Shane McGuigan. I think McGuigan ended up marking Reid that day for periods of time too. I think he ended up going hammering tongs, if I can remember it. Yeah. Anyway.
We'll move on to this weekend's action, lads. There's a couple of corkers in there. Not least the Saturday night game, which is Limerick versus Cork. Obviously, Limerick's league hasn't been optimal, but I think any fear of relegation may be staved off in their final game against Westmeath. So I don't think it's time for panic stations. As Shane Dowling said in his column last week, said you know there's career obituaries being written in Limerick off the back of a few league matches with a league with a three week lead in. So we're not there at all. But Derek, it might get their juices flowing now to welcome a Cork side who've been getting some good press to the Gaelic grounds on
some bad press as well.
But I'd be interested, I suppose, to a large extent, what you think Donal O'Grady has brought. And would I be way off the mark to say that you would have been quite influenced by Donal O'Grady's teams of the noughties and what they did to the game of hurling? I don't think it'd be too far off the mark to say that.
Yeah, I would. I've been a kind of a fan, I suppose, of the possession game and the short game, etc. Look, I think there's an issue here for. On the outside, if you like, in terms of Cork. Like, first of all, I actually don't think it's anything new, right? So that, I put my own opinion on that. Like, it might be new from last year, maybe for Cork, but it's very hard to judge last year, winter championship, etc. I think the general perception around Cork over the last few years has been they don't work hard enough. And that's been justified in some regards, how together they've been. So I think
don't work hard enough and they're a bit soft.
Yeah. And that, look, and I'd have an opinion.
I'll say it because you mightn't be able to.
No. But I'd have a strong opinion that there's no intercounty there. Soft. Is there underperformance? Is there kind of mental frailties at times? I think there is at times with all teams, and that can happen with management, never mind say team. So I think that's kind of a. So I suppose to answer your question, I suppose in terms of the influence of Donal O'Grady or his influence on us as managers or the team. We played Cork in 17, for instance. Cork had played Tipperary in the first round. It was the debut year of Shane Kingston, Dara Fitzgibbon, Mark Coleman, right, in 17.
Luke Mead, yeah.
And I would have noticed if you remember 16, right, Kieran's first year, Cork played William Egan, actually, as a sweeper.
That's right.
Yeah. In front of Shane McCallan and Damien
against
Callahan.
Tipperary, and it didn't work at all.
There was widespread criticism of it. And it nearly looked to me that it kind of almost permeated the approach of the management, if you like, right? So the following year, what they did then is they disguised the sweeper a bit easier, a bit better. So they put Mark Ellis really deep, and their half forward line were extremely deep, a la kind of Waterford, Limerick, all the teams, I suppose, that have been doing in the last few years. And they broke that pace with Fitzgibbon and Shane Kingston and Luke Mead, etc., using the ball with real pace and with real kind of direction. Now, the criticism has come because in the Tipperary game where it was over and back and it was a bit lateral. It's an execution thing, I think, as much as anything. It's the pace of the couple of weeks. I'll give you a personal example. I remember we played the 16 league final against Clare. First match, we received widespread criticism in terms of I think it was low scoring, etc. We played the replay the following Sunday. It was high scoring. It was 4-18 to whatever the score was. We played the exact same way. The commentary afterwards was, the shackles are off. You know, the shackles were off. Everything was loose. Just let them out to play. And when we come out afterwards and say, no, sure, we played no different. It was the exact same. People are saying, no. That's a load of bull or whatever. So I think it's a long-winded answer I'm giving you. I think that's going to face Cork now. They're going to get a bit of this. You know, they're going to get, and it's the strength of the management and players combined to be able to kind of stick
Lot
the course.
All that out, yeah.
Stick the course, and because that's going to be difficult, I would perceive.
And Derek, there's no crowd in the ground. Do you know the point I'm making? Parky Queeve was packed and they're trying to play like that and they're getting done for over carrying, the crowd will let you know about it. Now, maybe you'll answer that. Maybe does that put pressure on you then?
That does. It does. And players are human. Like, have a situation. Like, We showed a clip last Sunday night, for instance, with Kilkenny, where TJ was the only guy inside the whole half of the field, right? And if there's a crowd in there and that ball is hit up and Matthew O'Hanlon wins it as opposed to TJ, a collective sigh is going to come, man. And I can tell you, you might say you're in the zone on a day of a match and you can't hear it, but if it comes regularly, you know, it's just, look, it's a kind of a debate. But I don't think it's as new as people think.
No,
I think
it's
the 70s they actually played like that. And I think in the 05-06 under O'Grady, kept the ball. Cody, if you look at Cody's interview on Sunday after the match, he kind of said he didn't want to hear tale of Kilkenny are playing a different way. So he kind of said, we have a saying, you give the ball to the boy, fella in the best position. Like, he's kind of, you know.
What about win your own ball?
You know, so it's kind of, he had the simplification of it done for maybe some people that like to overcomplicate or perceive to overcomplicate.
That style of play, because we've seen it with Wexford, seen it with Limerick to an extent, and obviously with Waterford, it takes, like, I can only imagine the drills that are done, like the training, the repetition over and over and over again. But we've all seen it for our own counties or in teams opposing, that when it clicks, all of a sudden it looks like, well, this makes perfect sense. Whereas, like, I've seen it with Wexford, where the games when it didn't work, you're like tearing your hair out and you're one of those old fellas, and we ever just leave it into the edge of the square. And then the next day, these hand passes and the timing's right and the guy's running off the shoulder, the hand pass is right. And obviously, so that's what they want to do. So
yeah.
I don't know. We've all seen it repeatedly in the last 5, 6, 7 years, but I still think when it's your own county and it's not working,
Did you guys see the stat with Tipperary, for example, whereby, now not an official stats person, but the stat came out from a guy in the county that does it, like that out of the 10 direct long balls that were going into the attack, only 3 were won. And that's why that's forced them into a rethink this year as well, you know. So, but look, that criticism would have been there for a long time, that tip forwards weren't able to win their own ball. That's going back 20 years. But just when you see it broken down, I think, Derek, what you were saying, it's not new, but it's definitely more over-exaggerated, I think, the possession. They're definitely, they're going through every single channel possible, I think, aren't they, this time?
Yeah. But the other thing I will say, though, I think, and just... know Kieran relatively well, and Christie's involved there, Christie O'Connor, and you know, a few guys behind the scenes. And I think every county manager is probably talking about flexibility, like that they're trying to get a mixture of the short and you know, be able to then go into Patrick Horgan and Cadigan early as well when the space opens up, you know, or be able to go into an Aaron Gillan and a Jamie Flanagan when the space opens up, or be able to situate Conor McDonald with Rory O'Connor for a few minutes inside, or be able to situate, you know. Like if you have a situation where you have Bubbles and Callan inside, or you have Bubbles and or Shamie Callan and John McGrath inside, you're going to try and get it in early as well, you know, at times. So I think it's easy to kind of say, you know, we're playing a new game, but I think within the kind of the bowels of Temple Stadium or Parky Cueve or Welsh Park here, they're talking about mixing it up, and they're not also forgetting the ferocity that they need as to underpin all that approach. I think that's sometimes we lose sight of that, the key principles of your team.
Yeah, and as for Limerick, Rory, you know, obviously we mentioned the slight bit of hysteria that which you'll get early in the year. An unbeaten record is well and truly gone now, but there was, I wouldn't say John Kiley was dealing in hyperbole when he said there was a lot to be happy with after that match down in Walsh Park the last day. There was a lot in it that was probably the Limerick of old. They just came up against a very good Waterford team, and that, you know, he won't be getting overly worried, I would imagine, would he? Was my point.
There were some things that he would be happy with, but I'd say there would probably be more things that he would be unhappy with. I think one of the big issues, like they're going in, like they're playing Cork, obviously at home, front of no crowd, which probably, you know, takes away a little bit of the advantage, fair enough. It's live on TV, which is great. It's on RT2 as well. I think the biggest issue for them is, and again, be very interested in Derek's view and Damien's view, because Damien would have a very long-standing tradition of and history of an understanding this. To me, Limerick look like a team that have, you know, dined out on a little bit of success and now have a massive target on their back, and as a result, everyone's coming for them. And they got a bit cranky. You know, and I think that's actually very, very natural. It happens. Like if you talk to Tomás O'Shea or if you talk to Henry or any, like, no, Kilkenny were a bit more cold blooded. But, you know, like if you talk to teams that enjoy success after a long period of having none, Claire from the 90s Dalo will tell you that they will get cranky because everyone is coming for you, whether it's the media, whether it's the opposition, whether you think that it's refereeing, whether it's everything. And then it starts to create that siege mentality, which I don't think serves anybody any purpose whatsoever. And I think Limerick need to be careful. I think that's what you saw with his apology the last time, that they don't go down that road of siege mentalities, because that really only gets you so far. I think they just have to trust in themselves that they will get their form back. I think they have a great opportunity to do that this weekend, and I think they will. One caveat that I would add to it all is I heard on the nighttime program after last year's All-Ireland final, Jackie and a few others make mention of the fact that there was potential dynasties starting. And in fairness to them, they're in a very lucrative position as things stand. They have won two of the last three. They've won a batch of leagues. They've won a couple of Munster championships. And it's very, very successful from a Limerick perspective. But I never really felt they were so far ahead that all the chase and pack needed to be worried, and that there was going to be this kind of Kilkenny style era of dominance that we were all facing into. I kind of always thought that, okay, they beat Waterford well in the All-Ireland final last year. That All-Ireland final was played obviously in very different circumstances to the one that we're going to be playing, that one that's going to be contested this year, because it's winter versus summer, and we all know they're two different sports. And the chase and pack were never that far off. Now, you know, you could be looking at a few suspensions. They might pick up a few injuries. You know, a little bit of hunger just takes a little bit of the edge off. All of a sudden, you know, you could get caught by a Cork or get caught by a Tipperary, and then all of a sudden you find yourself out in your arse in the early rounds or whatever. So I think from Limerick's perspective, it's just a case this weekend, get themselves back up onto the horse. They probably need the win more so than Cork, I would suggest, because I think if Cork lose, you know, they've had a reasonably good campaign so far in terms of the performances that they've put in. So I think, yeah, is there a bit more pressure on them? There probably is. There's a bit more focus on them. There probably is. But that comes with being champions, and it's just something they're going to have to learn to live with.
Rory is one of the doomsayers, I see. Derek, how about that crankiness then? Because, again, it's something Shane Dowling touched on in his column last week. He was delighted, he said, to see Kyle Hayes get that red card. Well, not that he got the red card, but he said that fight at the end, he said, it showed him a lot. And Shane would know these players very well. So is crankiness, is siege mentality always a bad thing? And do you see it in this Limerick team?
Well, it's not sustainable. It's good for a one-off performance.
Yeah.
You know, it's good for maybe two performances where, you know, you often hear Paul O'Connell talking about, you know, we're better when we're bitter, I think, for Munster rugby over the year. But the sustainability, I'd say, is questionable. You know, if Waterford were to meet Limerick, I remember Limerick played there in a very fairly heated league game, the year before. And I remember thinking to the first time I saw John really animated on the line against Don Maloney and Gerry O'Connor, I was saying there's a bit of storage here. And, you know, they come back, you know, with a combination of vicious savagery and good play. You know, so look, that, but it's the sustainability of it. Rory is right. There's a great book you probably read, Hunger in Paradise, Rasmus Ankersen. He talks about, and Gavin would be big into this now, burning your trophies, and that you treat defeat with as much skepticism as you do victory. And I think Limerick will be okay in that regard, because I think they've probably acknowledged exactly what Rory has just said here, you know, in terms of, look, we're cranky, we need to...
It's just a little bit of crankiness. I think that they can flush out of their system quite easily.
Yeah, and that's my very point. I think they will have acknowledged that there was things they got right, but hang on, let's have a look at this kind of element that we need to kind of fix. And I'd say with Corrid involved, I'd say that she has a major role in that whole kind of refocusing of what's important here, you know what I mean? And I think they've probably done a huge amount of work in the whole area of vulnerability. And I'd say they're vulnerable now. And I think they'll twist it to kind of, not to suit themselves in a siege mentality way, but maybe a combination of that with a refocusing in terms of getting its trajectory right. And I think they'll do that Saturday, even if they don't win, that might make sense to you now, but...
Yeah, no, it does. And Damien, on the other side then, Waterford, it's kind of something we've talked about a couple of times already, to the kind of, you know, from one season to the other, kind of keeping the head level. How impressed have you been with Waterford, and how they've just picked up? Because that was a galling All-Ireland final, obviously a very tough defeat to take. But
yeah,
whatever was said, you know, by your county man in the off-season, or however he's dealt with it, they do seem to be coming strong.
And when when I heard like the players that were missing this year from Waterford are going to be missing, I automatically wondered, Jesus, where's the kick going to come from this time around? But it has, like, but if you were down the likes of Matney or De Burka or Fives, and
your goalkeeper, to lose your goalkeeper as well, Damien, like, you know, top class keeper, like,
I suppose he probably went at an early stage, and you're right, I didn't even factor him in because the lads kind of came after him. But it's certainly, and Derek would know, like, Stephen would have been so crucial to the restarts and the way the Waterford play. I suppose there is always a chance for somebody else. But look, Mikey Beavens is a great coach. He's a cousin of mine, I have to say as well, hold my hands up. And Cahill, in fairness to him, is a good, solid, straight manager with plenty of success. And they're very, very driven. And they're going into a group of players that Derek would know well that are equally driven, I think. And with the work rate and work ethic that they have, they always have a chance. I think they're a very honest bunch. I think they'll have a big, big game at the weekend and go an awful long way, I think, towards telling what their season might look like. But certainly I give them way more hope now than I did a few weeks ago when I heard the number of big names that were missed, if that makes any sense.
It does. Derek, you referenced it as well, and you're impressed with how they're going. Of the kind of the new lads who've come in or whatever, are many of, obviously you know who they were, but have you been kind of surprised in any way by how quick they've kind of knitted into inter-county hurling, or was this a case of you knew that there was ready-made replacements there?
Yeah, I'd rather be saying I knew. It's very self-indulgent, but like I actually did up a few stats before we came on there. I'm saying there's actually 19 of the 26 that were involved in the county panel for the All-Ireland last year that have been there 6 or more years. It's
a bit of experience there.
Yeah, sort of like, you know, the guys who have come in have probably served as Shane McNulty, Conor Prunty, Peter Hogan, all these guys that have come in, they've actually been there a good amount. Like, Patrick Horn was the highest scorer in the league in 2016. And, you know, he came in and got 3 points. He said, you know, I heard him be described as a new player, you know. Patrick's seventh year, like, you know. And there's an argument to be made that Waterford are about to peak, actually, you know. Yeah. I know it sounds probably inconceivable
I really like them.
You know, like, Austin is in 26th year. They're like, they won the minor All-Ireland in 2013, and they're free from a little bit of expectation in terms of when you lose Tighe, when you lose Pádraig, the media comes back off you and they kind of say, yeah, listen, Waterford, I think they might beat someone, but they won't be too consistent. And I think you have a very hungry group of players.
Really,
and I think they're one thing they have over nearly every team, they are the quickest team nearly in the championship in terms of pace, like Caelan Lyons, Jamie, Stephen Bennett. And very, very cleverly last week, you had Desi, Shane Bennett back in the squad last week, had for the Limerick game, had Desi Hutchinson back in the team. He didn't light it up. No one was talking about it, but I can tell you, Shane Bennett is a serious player. Yeah. He is a really good player, and he will come eventually. So I think it's not inconceivable that Waterford will be playing Tip in the last round of the league to win the league.
Derek, tell me this much. Is there any chance we'll see Tadhg Na Bhfirca this year? Unlikely, I would imagine, is it?
Look, unlikely. I've the only contact I've had with Tadhg now in the last couple of months, we by one of our own lads, young lads, Torres Cruces here, under 15, and I got Tadhg to ring. So I would never even entertain asking him where he fixed. In the role you're in now, you kind of just...
But if you're
the most advanced.
Yeah.
Pádraig is the most advanced. Tadhg seems to have taken a step back in terms of training away from the panel. Is it a possible situation where we'll see him coming close to the championship? I don't think so. You know, I'm not sure. I'm not sure, to be honest, to answer that question. I'd be very close to Tadhg, but yet I haven't had much contact with him, if that makes sense. You know?
That makes sense,
You know,
But before we leave, the one question I want to ask Derek, while we have you and we're talking about Waterford, what would you describe Austin Gleeson's role as at the moment? And would you say it is the best use of Austin Gleeson, which is a conundrum that has baffled for years?
Well, look, it never baffled me, to be honest with you. I'm going to demonstrate on this. Remember again, I personalised it, I suppose. We were beat heavily in that semi-final 17 by Cork in the Munster semi-final, and the word around here was Austin needs a position. We played him centre forward for the rest of the championship, and he played everywhere else bar centre forward. You know, so so the point I make, I suppose, is will he score 3 points from play from centre back in most games? He possibly would, which, you know, he possibly will score as much from there. It's the conundrum for Liam is he has St. Tighe, and Tighe is his next best, you know, kind of, you know, Tighe is his man for six, like, and his man for sitting six or doing the job that's needed as a six. So it looked like with the Limerick game was a game that they had in mind for targeting.
Right.
In terms of their approach, like with Brunty at three and Austin at six. So I think that's what, I think the balance of the team is probably best served at the minute with him at six, you know, at the minute. And look, the wall that's in front of you now in terms of five or six players, Austin could be able to put the ball on the hurley at six, like Caleb Lyons at five and go from five and six as well. So it doesn't just, he can have Jamie Barr or he can have Kevin Warren that can sit at centre back for a few minutes while he's midfield, if you like.
You change game to game, yeah.
Yeah, not a bad conundrum to have now.
I wasn't
trying to say it was a problem. It was just something that interested us all. It's a national pastime where to play out for Gleeson. All right, lads, I enjoyed that chat. Thanks very much. Just to say, as Rory mentioned, that game between Limerick and Cork is live on RT television. And as always, Saturday and Sunday Sport will have you well covered, as will we on the internet, on the RT app and the RT news app and the RT website. So that's about it. Thank you very much. Marathon show this week. Good effort, everybody. Even you, Derek, you only came in for a half, but you know, a finisher, as Eddie Jones said.
I'm well used to coming off the bench.
All right. We'll catch you all again next week. Thank you very much.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
But what I love in hurling, I love players that never give in.
He hits it, it's over the bar. Oh, holy Moses.